Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
About 60 minutes ago, maybe even less, I guess he left the office about 30 minutes ago, I had a pastor come into my office, someone that I've known for many years. In fact, he was a doctoral student of mine, and we have a lot of different connections. And he sat across from me, and he started talking to me about his heart for church revitalization. But he got to the essence of why he was there. And here's what he told me. He said, "I see some warning signs in my church. I've been at my church for 10 years now, and I'm beginning to see some warning signs." I said, "Well, what do you mean by warning signs?" He said, "Well, if you were to look at our church, you would not say that it was declining, because numerically it is not declining. But I see that that's probably one of the next things that's going to happen, the numerical decline, because I'm beginning to see some symptoms of what I've seen in many churches," and I'm quoting him to the best of my recollection, "what I've seen in many churches, that these things often precede and accompany decline as well." So as he talked about those, and frankly, I did not know I was about to come in here and do a podcast just on that one topic. I knew that it was scheduled at some point. I look at these warning signs that we're about to go over, that we're about to review, and I cannot say that he had all of them, but some of those were very close to what we're going to talk about today. So, Jonathan, I had a real-life lab in the story of this pastor from another state come in and just talk to me about what's going on at his church. It was ironic that this should be our podcast for today.
Well, this comes out of a recent post that you did on the most common factor in declining churches. And in that post, you stated that that factor is an inward focus. So why is that so damaging to churches?
Well, let's clarify. First of all, there do need to be some ministries that are focused on the members. You need to care for the members. You need to have pastoral care. They need to be discipled. But if a church is only focusing on itself, then they will start fighting among themselves. You ever had any of your sons, and I know you're about to have a daughter come into this world, which is going to just rock your boat like in ways you can't imagine, but because I couldn't. I got granddaughters, and even they rock my boat in ways that I never would imagine. Have you ever had your boys fight with each other?
Never. Yeah, all the time.
And usually it happens when they're in a room together for all time, or they're confined.
The more they're together, the more they fight.
But you get them out, and they start doing some other things, and they're less likely to fight. I'm not making the metaphor perfect nor the analogy right in line, but if church members are only focusing upon themselves, their needs, their ministries, they tend to get a little petty. They tend to have a greater opportunity to fight. And so what do? You get them moving outwardly. Now, that's easier said than done, but we're going to be addressing that not only in this podcast, but in other times to come as well.
The 8 warning signs that you listed here, we're going to run through those. Number one is that there are few attempts to minister to those in the community. I mean, that right out the gate right there.
Yeah, look at how the church spends its money. Look at how their members spend their time. And, you know, Acts 1:8 is Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth. Many of our churches are doing pretty well at the ends of the earth in Samaria. They're taking mission trips. But what are they doing in their immediate community? Mm. How are they ministering to the homes, the businesses right around them? What are they doing? That, to me, is one of the telltale signs of whether a church is truly outwardly focused. And I don't want to suggest it's easy to go on an international mission trip. I commend people who do that, and I'm happy to see that, and that does help. But the true sign of a church that is outwardly focused is that it is consistently doing things to minister in the community. By the way, I saw a video of a church in the area where you and Amy T and Amy J live, part of Team Rainer, and the video talked about all of the ministries that church is doing and all of the things, and they were all over the community. They were just, I think I texted you, where do you live? What church do you go to? Y'all weren't at any of those church, neither one of you three are, but not to say your church isn't. This was just another church. And it was an incredible story. And I knew that church was outwardly focused.
Well, one of the things you mentioned on the blog and in previous podcasts that you used to do whenever you were a consultant was to ask businesses and different groups in the area of the church if they knew where the church was.
Last time I did any kind of consultation, I no longer do consultations for me, but every now and then, because I want to get out, I'll do one with my son. And I just got to make this caveat. He gets all of the income. All I do is get all of the work. And I was in this other city and other place of church. I stopped at a business. I said, "Do you know where this church is?" They said, "No." I stepped out the front door. I said, there it is. Right where you could see it. Not directly in front of it, but as we used to say deep down south, catty corner.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, that happened to you whenever you were in St. Petersburg at first on a door-to-door evangelism type visit.
You've got a good memory. I was pastor of the Isaiah Baptist Church, and we were actually hanging hangers on the doors. And we were just saying, "How can we meet your needs?" And we'll come back and pick up the hanger. And someone came out and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm representing Isaiah Baptist Church. We're just trying to do a community survey." And this was actually at a convenience store. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Where's that?" I said, "Just look about a half a block down. That's the steeple. That's the church." "Oh, I never knew it was there." I said, "Oh my goodness, we have a little bit of work to do in this church."
Number two, church business meetings become arguments over preferences and desires. Now, I know whenever you're a pastor, you loved having business meetings because of your financial mind, right?
I would love having business meetings. It's all we did was go over the finances and say, "Okay, that's it. Is there anything you want? Anything else you want?" But church business meetings can become rancorous times. They can become times of division. It's those times where you sometimes see people that you never see otherwise. They show up at the business meeting because they are there to be divisive. They're there to cause trouble. And if that is becoming endemic and symptomatic of a church, you know that that is a major symptom, that it is becoming more and more inwardly focused. Now, every church is going to have a few people, even the most outwardly focused, that are cantankerous and are going to complain in a business meeting. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about these business meetings where they become full-fledged fights between church members, not physical necessarily, but definitely verbally.
Now, this may be getting us off topic here a little bit, but does it seem that this has decreased over the past few years as it's, I guess, become more well-known and people have cautioned against it? Maybe church government forms have changed. Pastors are taking steps to alleviate the possibility of these business meetings turning hostile?
No. Here's what has happened. The frequency of business meetings have declined, so mm-hmm. therefore the fights have declined. But when you have a business meeting, the percentage of those that are becoming negative and divisive, from my anecdotal observation, have not changed significantly at all.
Okay, number three is that numbers of members in the congregation are openly critical of the pastor, other church staff, and lay leaders in the church. That's kind of, we talked about that in the previous podcast on 7 Ways to Hurt Your Pastor.
Yeah, again, pastors can expect criticism. Church staff can expect criticism. Key lay leaders in the church can expect criticism. Anytime you lead, you are going to be criticized. That just goes with the territory. But if the amount of criticisms begin to increase, if the intensity of the criticisms begin to increase, that is a potential sign that the church is headed in a wrong direction. And it's not only numerical decline, but it's also spiritual decline and spiritual apathy as well.
Is that because typically the criticism is because you're not meeting my needs and serving my preferences?
Well said. Well said. And you go back to the I Am a Church Member book that we introduced a little over a year ago, and that is an indication of a healthy church member who will say, "My church is not about my needs and preferences." An unhealthy church member is going to fight and complain because his or her needs are not being met in the church.
And that kind of ties into number four. Any change necessary to become a Great Commission church is met with anger and resistance. Change in a lot of churches often brings that anger and resistance.
I'm getting redundant in my stories, especially with you, Jonathan, because you've heard all of them. You travel with me. You listen to these podcasts on the other end of the table here, and you're part of them, and you hear my stories. But one of the great shocks I had in a church was when a woman, I almost called her a lady, when a woman came up to me and said, "We've got a problem in this church." And I said, "What is it?" And she was one of these continuous critics, and she said, "You are leading too many people to Christ. Church is changing too much." And I was just dumbfounded.
How do you respond to that?
I did not respond to that. I didn't know what to say. I had never had that.
I can think of a few responses, but yeah, that's probably not.
Even at the time, I was shell shocked. I was just totally silent. And she walked away, and I just said, "What just happened then? I've got to stop telling people about Jesus because our church is changing too much." Well, maybe that's an extreme example, but often when change is taking place in a church, even change that is positive, people look at change and they say, "It's not my church anymore. I'm uncomfortable with the direction we're going." And if that becomes resistance to good change in the church, that is a negative sign for the congregation as a whole.
You mentioned it's not my church anymore. That dovetails right into number five, is that the past becomes the hero.
I mentioned to you not too long ago, I said, "Jonathan, do you remember the guy named Lyle Schaller?" And you said,
"Nope."
I believe that was on
the Tom Rainer Live.
Tom Rainer Live we did some time back. And Lyle Schaller has probably written more books on congregational life than anybody alive today. He's probably in his 90s right now. And he's literally probably got 90 to 100 to 110
I'm sure
books.
Lyle is a good listener of the podcast.
He might be.
If you are, shoot us a line. Let us know.
He would often say in many of his books, he would ask this question, "What year is it?" And the question was not, "Tell me the date today," but "Where are you living?" We're doing this podcast in 2014. I'm about to head to a church in New England this weekend to help Sam on a consultation. And one of the questions I'm going to ask is, "What year is it? What year is it in this church? Is it 1985? Is that the good old days? Is it 1990? Is it 1972? What year is it?" When the past becomes the focus, there's nothing. We should revere the past, but we should not worship the past. And when we make the past our goal for the present, you can make certain that the church is headed in a wrong direction.
Ed Stetzer has a line that he always uses, that if the 50s came back, there'd be a lot of Southern Baptist churches ready to go.
Wow, you're picking on my denomination, Jonathan.
It's my denomination, too.
Okay.
And it's Ed, so blame him.
I will.
All right, number six, culture is seen as the enemy instead of an opportunity for believers to become salt and light.
I recently spoke about my pastor, Mike Glenn, and hearing one of his sermons from 1 Peter about being strangers, sojourners, aliens in this world. And he got up there before the congregation after reading the passage, and he would say, "Folks, culture is not our problem. Folks, it is. We're all bemoaning the way the American culture, the world culture is headed. And I know things are bad, and I know they're bad." So that's not the problem. The problem is when believers fail to be, in the metaphor of the Bible, salt, flavor, light, to bring brightness upon the darkness. When we fail to do that, we are the problem. The church has always been in situations where the culture was averse to the health of the church, if it followed the culture. But when we can be the change agents, and here's the way I feel about the current American culture that many of our churches are in today. I think we have a better opportunity than we've ever had. I think we have a mission field that is not unlike the first century AD. Mm-hmm. I think we have a greater opportunity to reach people with the gospel. We've got to stop complaining about the culture and instead be the salt and light, because we will stand out even more in this perverse culture that we're in. And that's why his sermon inspired me so much.
Number six kind of deals with withdrawing from external relationships. Number seven is more of a withdrawal from an internal relationship. Pastors and other leaders in the church become discouraged and withdraw from effective leadership.
Again, another story. I was talking to a church leader. He had recently served as adjudicatory leader over several churches in his denomination. And he said, "You know what I'm hearing from pastors more than any time in my life?" And he was 54, 55 years old. "So what is it?" And he said, "More pastors are telling me today that their goal is to get out of the pastorate than any time that I've ever heard. Discouragement is so great. Disillusionment is at an all-time high." This was his perspective. "That their goal right now is to get out as quickly as they can, as safely for their family as they can." I don't know if he's precise with his statement, but it's not too far off. Mm-hmm. There are a number of pastors who are so beaten up, so discouraged, who've tried to lead, And it has been so painful for them and their families, they're ready to withdraw from leadership. And, you know, it's my prayer in a small way, Jonathan, that the ministry that is emanating forth from me and you and Amy J and Amy T and others who are part of the team can be part of that encouragement, that in support, to let pastors know that they will not only get through this time, but there are better times ahead. We can't keep losing good pastors, either through forced termination or just a desire to get out and quit.
And that kind of dovetails back to the pastoral tenure issues that we've talked about, pastors giving up, you know, when that change is just around the corner. But, you know, a lot of times they've just had enough.
And pastoral tenure was the big factor over the last previous two decades. And oftentimes the perceived solution by a pastor, sometimes rightly so, was I've got to get out of this church and go to the next one. Now the solution is I got to get out of church work altogether.
Yeah.
And I want to leave. Again, how pervasive is that? I don't know. It may not be too pervasive, but this denominational leader is hearing it more in his ministry, and he probably has 35 years of ministry than any other time. And so it is a sign. If the church staff has just given up, if the pastor has given up, you know that the church is headed for tough times.
What would you say to that leader who's maybe considering that?
I'd say take a break for a little while, first of all. I mean, even if it's a long weekend, I know many of these pastors cannot take long breaks.
Yeah.
Go talk to someone who could be a good counsel, someone who could provide some insight. If at all possible, there are some good pastor retreats where you can get away and get another perspective. What these leaders need is a fresh perspective. They need a little time away. More would be better than a little, but many of them can only take a little step back and let God speak to them in a way so they can see, is it truly time to give up or should I persevere?
Number 8 is quite telling. If the churches are part of a denomination or similar affiliation, meetings of those denominations mirror the churches in lost focus and divisiveness.
Yeah, churches that are part of denominations will often be reflected in the denominational meeting. Now, some of the more common battles are doctrinal battles that are taking place,
mm-hmm.
and I fully understand that. We have to stand up for faith once delivered to the saints. Absolutely. But many denominational meetings are becoming factions and fighting about secondary, tertiary, or even non-issues.
Yeah.
And as a result, what is happening in the church is often mirrored within the denominational meeting. And just like the church is unable to move forward, the denomination collectively is unable to move forward because it's dealing with what I would call these brush fires that just keep coming up again and again, these fights, instead of focusing on the main thing. The main thing is doctrinal purity. The main thing is the Great Commission. The main thing is the Great Commandment. And moving forward with that is often difficult when we are too busy fighting among ourselves.
With a denomination that has, I guess, more controlling influence, more of the mainline denomination type structures, that they should be able to turn that ship just a little bit more because they have a greater influence in the churches because of the structure of the denomination. But for our denomination, Southern Baptist, the autonomy kind of prevents that. How does an autonomous denomination, not just the Southern Baptist, but ones like it, how do they influence from the top down whenever that structure is not there like in most of the mainline denominations?
Well, ultimately, because within our denomination we focus on autonomy, we cannot control. All we can do is influence.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to influence is for leaders to keep focused on the main thing. If we start getting distracted, and I have done so more times than I would like to admit, if we get distracted, we then become a bad example for our church leaders, local congregational leaders, because we're not focusing upon where we should be focused. So we can be role models.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about what churches should focus on and, you know, their community and stuff. So what would you say to a denomination, maybe not specifically the Southern Baptist Convention? I mean, people will try to assume that that's what you're talking about here because of our affiliation, but any denomination in general, what should the denominational focuses be?
Well, again, the denominational focus should be upon the health of the local churches. What does that mean? Well, it means that, first of all, that the teaching and the doctrine is sound. Secondly, it means that they are reaching out into their community in Great Commission fashion, in Great Commandment, and all the implications thereof. That would mean healthy church planning. That would mean healthy church revitalization. That would mean standing up for the things we should stand up for, and that would mean being that metaphorical salt and light in the culture.
This week's podcast is brought to you by Autopsy of a Deceased Church. Whether your church is vibrant or dying, Autopsy of a Deceased Church will walk you through the radical paths necessary to keep your church alive to the glory of God and the advancement of Christ's kingdom. Find out more at tomrainer.com/autopsy. I know you love that website.
Yeah, tomrainer.com, his autopsy. No, it's just tomrainer.com/autopsy. Jonathan, we mentioned this, but one of the reasons I wrote Autopsy was to give warning signs, to go back and see what happened to churches that are dying. And many of those issues in Autopsy parallel the 8 warning signs that we talked about of declining churches. So don't just look at that book and say, let me find out how to kill a church. Look at that book and say, this is why churches died. I want to prevent my church from going down the same path.
That'll do it for this week on A Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.